RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
It may be the nighttime,
but the sports talk doesn't stop.
Sports talk radio that's live, local,
and not for the faint of heart.
Oh, you didn't know?
Sometimes angry.
Loud noises!
Telling it like it is.
You insulted him a little bit. You got a little out of order yourself.
And pretty much always right.
Don't ever argue with the big dog. Big dog is always right.
Text or call 404-741-0929 and be part of the show.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Kia Studios, it's time for the John Chuckery Show. Serving you up sports on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Really ought to be the John Chuckery experience, because it's not so much a show, I think, as it is an experience. Knowing Chuck all these years. But he's off for the next three nights, so you're stuck with me. But that's okay. From the Northern Kia Studios, we're going to talk. You and I. We're going to have a chance to chat tonight. It's like literally belly up to the bar. As Chuck is off, John Fricke from the Northern Kia Studios on Sports Radio 92 on The Game. We are in game mode again in Cleveland tonight for the Atlanta Braves. And you know, it was so kind of interesting because I was thinking this is the first time I have done a night show since I left Fox Sports Radio and came to 929 The Game when we started, and we launched in October of 2012. So it's been a minute since I've done a night show. And it would have been probably in September of 2012 because I chose to leave Fox Sports Radio because I wanted to be part of this, all this mess over the last nearly 11 years, because I wanted to talk to you, all you Atlanta fans. I was on the national radio, and it was great. I mean, I loved it, don't get me wrong. But when I was on the national radio, I was talking to people in, like, you know, some dude in Little Rock. John, what do you think of them Arkansas Razorbacks? What going to happen with Peyton Hillis this year? You know, I was like, okay, enough of that. Being a Braves fan and being a Falcons fan and a Hawks fan and all that kind of good stuff, I wanted to talk to all of you. So this is my first crack at a night show in quite some time, and it feels pretty good. It's going to be interesting. I've been all over the map here ever since I, you know, was no longer on the morning show. And I've done Dukes of Bell, and I've done Andy and Randy. I've done Steakhouse. And, of course, I do my own thing on the weekends, and now I get a chance to do Chuckery Show. So, anyway, way I do shows, and forgive me because I occasionally would be out and about, and I mean occasionally, at night because I did the morning show. So most of the time by 6 o'clock, I was pretty much in for the evening. And by 8 o'clock, I was, you know, Betty Bye because I had to be up at 3:15. So I didn't hear John do the show a lot. So I'm not real. I mean, I know John. I've done 1,000 shows with him. But I don't know his show all that well. Day-Day's back in the studio. Now, Day-Day, on this show, if I don't do What's Bugging Frick, is that okay?
I mean, you know, I guess we can let that go, but I mean, there's got to be something bugging Frickery.
Well, but that's always the case, isn't it?
Right, so I mean, you might as well do it.
Right. Well, how long have you known me?
Long enough to know.
Right. I'm the keeper of the Kool-Aid, driver of the bandwagon. And do I have to introduce myself to his audience after 10 and a half, almost 11 years?
I'm pretty sure
you guys, I wouldn't think so. All you guys know me, right? All right, good. So I'm going to dispense with that idea. So the Braves are getting ready. Here goes Michael Soroka in his next start. Now, isn't this going to be so interesting to find out? Two things, because I think one of them is true. What happened last night, all you did was make them mad. This team hasn't lost more than two in a row since the middle of May. And I think all last night, you know, they come back, they tie it up, and we're thinking, okay, great. And then, it looks like they might score in the top of the 10th, and it kind of fizzles out. And then, of course, bottom of the 10th happened. And I went, all right, fine, whatever. We'll live with this. They took one on the chin. You're not going to win them all, but it was like, all right. I'm so spoiled, I think they're going to win them all, right? But I think all you do sometimes, like when they had the 7-game win streak and then they lost a couple, and then they went on an 8-game win streak, and then they lost one. And it was like that one loss was the Reds' loss, right, 11-10. Because in this 24-4 run, they've lost one game 11-10 by a run, and the other two more that were in extra innings losses. And it's like every time they lose a game, they just get mad. They go, okay, all right, enough of this. So we'll see if they come out with a chip on their shoulder tonight. And then Michael Soroka. So he has the first two starts, right, in Oakland and Arizona, and that doesn't go so well. And they send him back to Gwinnett, and all of us are sitting around going, all right, what's the deal here? What gives? Is it a mechanical issue? Is it a health issue? Is he got something stuck between his ears that he can't get out? And he goes down to Gwinnett and pitches lights out. And then he comes back up here. I'm like, okay, well, it wasn't a health issue. That's good. Maybe it was a mechanical issue. We don't really know. And he pitches, and he first couple of innings, he's okay. And then he gets rocked with a couple of home runs in the third inning. We're all going, oh, my God, are we back to this again? And then he settles down, and 4-5-6, he gets out of it and looks pretty darn good. And says after the game, he's just got to get out of his own head, basically, for lack of a better term. He's just got to relax and throw. And it's like Rick Cranston saying, look, you got – how many All-Stars are out in the field with you? Six? Starting off, and that doesn't count other guys who probably ought to be All-Stars, like Rosario and Harris and everybody else. I mean, literally everybody that you're on the field with, that you step out of that diamond with, is either an All-Star, a Rookie of the Year, or should be an All-Star. I mean, so just let them do their job. And if he gets out of his head, I think he'll be fine. And having Michael Soroka fine, on top of the news about Max Fried, with him throwing live batting practice and saying he feels really good and he's ready to go. I mean, that's wonderful news too. And if Max is ready to go, I'm looking at, okay, let's say that after the All-Star break, right, he goes to Gwinnett. I don't know, maybe they send him to Rome first for a start, and then they send him up to Gwinnett for a couple of starts. And if he looks good, we're looking at somewhere around the 25th or 26th of July, about 3 weeks from now, that Max Fried could be back in this rotation. So he's healthy. He just has to trust it. Soroka's healthy, obviously. He just has to trust it. But if we get these two guys, and we get Michael, and we don't even have to have dominant ace Michael Soroka of 4 years ago, we just have to have a really good pitcher. And if we get the ace of Max Fried back to go to the top of the rotation in front of the other two guys who are All-Stars, suddenly your five-man sits at Max and Strider and Elder and Morton and Soroka, and we good. We good, okay? We really good. We really good. Now, having said that, the bullpen's pitched very well. It has over the last, 3 weeks or so. It's pitched very well. It's one of the reasons they're 24-4. Of course, they haven't been stressed all that many times, because most times the Braves are hitting like 28 home runs and it's like 15-0, and you can go out there and relax. High leverage situations, though, happened last night, and the bullpen ones are great. And I went, So a little bit later in the show, we're going to take a look at who is available on the trade market and the trade deadline here at the end of the month. It's August 1st, by the way. So what are we looking at? 26 days from now. And we know the magic that Alex Anthopoulos can pull at the trade deadline, right? Okay. And I'm looking at the list of potential guys who might be available, and I see one name. Now, he'd be a rental for the remainder of the season because he's a free agent at the end of the year. Don't care. That's the dude I want. I found somebody I want. Oh, I want him badly if he's available. And a couple of sites say he's going to be available. So Let's see what happens with that. I'll tell you who that is a little bit later in the program. We'll go over the list of people that players that might be available to you by the trade deadline, and whether or not the Atlanta Braves, because I think they ought to swim in some pretty deep waters here. It, you know, if the Max Scherzer, who, it's not Max, by the way, but if the Mets are going to trade Scherzer, which I think they will, they're going to trade Scherzer because they want to clear out money because they want to make a run at Shohei. And since this season is shot, you might as well trade Max. If Max Scherzer goes to somebody like the Dodgers, all right, we got to make a counter move. But I think I know what the counter move is. And again, I'll relay that to you a little bit later on in the show. As for the Hawks here, we're still on standby, right? I've been saying, and for the benefit of the audience out there that's listening at 7:09 p.m. On a Wednesday night, on other shows, my show, on Dukes and Bell, even with Randy Mack, there are only three potential outcomes for the Atlanta Hawks in this offseason. One is, you're not going to do anything, and the whole point of trading John Collins, we won't even worry about the alpha, beta, gamma trade or whatever the hell that thing was. The whole point of trading John Collins for Joey Bag of Donuts and a dollar was to clear cap space, just to get under the cap. If that was your goal, if your goal was to get under the salary cap, yeah, that's not a goal, guys. And it's not even a good business decision, because there are a bunch of fans, not me, but there are a bunch of fans out there that are kind of like sitting on the edge. They're called P2s. The P1 fans, which are the hardcore fans, they're going to be with you thick, thin, all that kind of good stuff. They're the fans that showed up when you went 13-69, okay? That was the Mike Woodson stuff, right? And then Woody turned it around and all that kind of good stuff. But they were there, and you know, when it was bad. And I'm a P1 fan. I was going to Braves games when there were 4,000 fans and you could get in for a dollar and sit anywhere you wanted, because we were no good. I went to the bad Falcons games too. I mean, I think we all did over the last 5 years, but that's not the point. The fact of the matter is, that's not a business plan, not when you have a superstar like Trey. So it can't be, right? So that leaves you only two options. One, they're talking to other teams, and they're talking about this. You see it everywhere. I think if you just Google it, you're seeing, you know, Siakam and, you know, talk of Siakam and things of that nature. One said multiple sources confirm that Trey Young has followed Pascal Siakam on his Instagram. Oh, good God. All right. I don't even know if that's true. Don't care. The whole point is that doesn't mean anything. But, you know, if they're going to make a move for a Pascal Siakam, you know, or a Zion Williamson or somebody else, great. You know, and that was the whole point of getting rid of the contract for John, so that they could get that done and bring in another star. Okay, good. I'm good with that. The final option, the third option is one they can't tell you. And this is where they get really kind of stuck. Because if they're going to exercise the third option, it's going to appear to be the first. The first, again, is we just sold John Collins' contract to get under the cap. But there has to be a purpose beyond just getting under the cap. It's either to clear cap space for somebody you can get now, or to clear cap space out and maybe additional cap space in another deal at the end of this coming season for a superstar. whose agent may or may not have contacted the Atlanta Hawks and said, you know what, at the end of this coming season, our guy'd like to play with Trey. But you can't say anything, you know? And so, okay. So it'll be really fascinating to see what happens with the Hawks. One final thing here. My daughter, Danny, Day-Day, have you met Danny?
No, I haven't. But you speak highly of her, and so I feel like I know her.
Yeah, well, you know, and she's an event coordinator for Atlanta United over there at the Home Depot backyard. And she, you know, she played soccer at Allerton High School and all that kind of good stuff. Big soccer fan and whatnot. She sends me this story that I missed. And this is, you know, your daughter being on top of things. I was not aware of this. And this is pretty interesting, because now with Messi coming into the league, makes you wonder about what Messi and Joseph are going to be able to do. And it also makes you wonder about the tactics, especially with Tata down in Miami and how he likes to play, right? What Atlanta United can do to take advantage of this if it comes to MLS next year, not this year, but next year. FIFA has allowed for the offside rule to change in soccer. This is big, okay? They're going to try it in the Netherlands and Norway and Finland or someplace like that. Anyway, they're trying it out, and it came from Arsenal, from the Gunners in the EPL. And basically, the rule used to be that the offensive player had to be even with the defensive player and could not be even, an inch, he couldn't have a finger in front of him when the ball was played, or otherwise he was considered offsides. Now, he can be in front of the defensive player as long as he's got an inch behind him. So instead of being an inch in front, it's now an inch behind. So if you just have your toe behind him, you could be ahead of the defensive player and then take off. This is going to open the game up.
I like that because I hope it trickles down to high school too, because
it's
that's one
rule.
Yeah, because it's so close so many times. You know what I mean? So I like it.
Yeah, you have to be fully in front of the defender for it to be offsides now. I mean, clearly fully in front of the defender. If a shoelace is even with a defender, your whole body can be in front of him, and then you could just take off. Yeah, mm-hmm. So this is a big rule change in soccer. And FIFA said, yep, we accept. So they're going to try it out in Norway and Finland or something for the remainder of the year, and then everybody's going to go to the EPL next year and hopefully MLS and on down. All right, in a moment, we're going to check in on one more thing here, which is the final itty-bitty list of the offseason. I'll explain that. John Frickey for John Chuckery tonight. We're going to take a lot of your calls. We got Jonathan Williams of Dogs Daily coming up in this hour. 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. It's going to be you and me. We're going to grab a beer and we're going to chat. We got a lot to talk about, too. On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Few things I never got to do in my now, how long has it been? I started in 1979, WGST on Far Road in Buckhead. That was about 44 years ago? Okay, one of the things I've not gotten to do or never got the chance to do in 44 years that I always wanted to get just one tryout for was the voice of NFL films. I always wanted to do it. I wanted to do that kind of Facenda thing. I don't have a bass, I have a baritone. I always thought it might work. You know, what the hell, I'll give it a crack. Yeah, it's a frozen day on Lake Erie, the Buffalo Bills. Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to do it. Anyway, we are about to have that happen because it's about to be football time in Tennessee and everywhere else, John Ward, including the National Football League, which starts in a couple of weeks here. We're going to get the first veterans 2 weeks from today. First veterans will report to training camp. That would be the New York Football Jets, because they play in the first preseason game. Here are the dates, and here are the important numbers. 14, 21, 29, 52 for you today. 14, 21, 29, 52. Those are the important days. And 14 days to the first veterans report for the first camp. That would be the Jets. 21 days until the Falcons veterans report at AT&T training camp in Flowery Branch, Georgia. And, of course, complete wall-to-wall coverage of the Falcons training camp live on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. 29 days away from the Jets and the Browns in the first toe meets leather, Al Seraldo, a Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. And 52 days from week zero of the college football season and the debut, the debut of Sam Hartman, the new quarterback at Notre Dame against Navy, as they play in Ireland in that first opening day of week zero. So those are the important days, 14, 21, 29, 52. By the way, I'll get back to the NFL here in just a moment, but I just want to say, at the beginning of the show tonight, I said all that loss last night did, and as a matter of fact, I tweeted it out after the loss, all it did was just make the Rays angry. You know that, right? You see what they did? Day-day. Michael Soroka hasn't set foot on the field, and it's 4-0.
Yep, just like that.
Just like that. And by the way, no home runs either. Single, 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 double. I mean, no home runs. Just a bunch of base hits, base knocks, and one big one from Eddie Rosario. So, yeah, it's 4-0. Is it our turn to pitch? Oh, okay, we'll go out there. Four more in the first. What, they had a five, they had a six, now they have a four. They are a first inning machine. Day-Day, how excited are you about, now this is no offense to the USFL, or do they play football up in Canada? I don't know, maybe they do. How excited are you for the start of the football season around here?
Oh, I'm very excited. Probably more so for college than NFL, but you know, either way it goes, football, I'm ready for it to get here.
Well, I'm excited equally for both, but because I'm a gigantic, ginormous college football fan, even though my team has been a bowl of suck over the last few years. Nonetheless, I'm still a gigantic fan of the game. Now, my NFL team hadn't been much better, if any. However, my NFL team, I think my NFL team is going to be pretty good. Okay, just saying. While I've used a large portion of my Kool-Aid stash on the Braves so far this year, I'll get more. I'm not worried about getting more bandwagons. I'll roll up to Ball Ground and find some dude's got a couple of flatbeds, and I'll throw some fans on him. It'll be good. I think that Falcons bandwagon is going to get to be pretty large this year, because I think they're going to be pretty good. Now, having said that, we had to go through all the list season, right? Non-stop lists. That's what the offseason is. Well, it's the draft, right? And then it's free agency, and then it's lists. Okay? All right, whatever. And when we get into list season, all it does is point out just how ignorant and unlearned most of the national football writers truly are, because they sit in their little bubble in New York or Los Angeles and sit at a computer and don't ever get out. I'm willing to bet you there are a number of people who write for football for the major, I'm talking ESPNs and CBSs and Yahoos of the world, who've never in their life been to Atlanta. Forget that they haven't been to a Georgia game or a Georgia Tech game or a Georgia State game. Of course, not a Georgia State game. They haven't been to a Falcons game. They've never been to Atlanta. They've never even been here. And they're writing stuff about stuff that they haven't seen anything. So how in the world would they know? Well, the answer is they wouldn't, and they don't. And the latest example of this is one Cody Benjamin of CBS Sports. Are you ready for this list here, Mr. Day-Day Lewis, producer and technical director, sir?
Yes, sir. I am ready.
Cody Benjamin writes an article that appears a couple of days ago in CBS Sports ranking the head coaches of the National Football League from best to worst from 1 to 32, okay? Whereabouts do you think Arthur Smith may have fallen on Mr. Benjamin's list?
He's probably got, I think I even might have heard something about this, but I want to say he's pretty low, like maybe like 27 maybe?
Yeah, 29.
29, ugh.
29, yeah. 29.
That's pretty jacked up.
Yeah, that is jacked up. And it's jacked up for a couple of reasons. One, because it's not even close to true. Now, you want to put him in somewhere around 16 and say, look, jury's still out. Let's see what he does now that he's got a much better roster. But like what he's done so far, because here is the fact, Cody Benjamin, if you are listening on the Odyssey app. Not you are, because I don't even know if you can find Atlanta on a map there, Cody. And that is there aren't five coaches in the NFL, and I mean not five, who could have won seven games in each of the last two seasons, played relevant games into January and Christmas in each of the last two seasons, especially last year with the noodle arm quitter at quarterback. There aren't five coaches that would have been able to pull that off. Arthur Smith did. And yes, the Andy Reids may have, you know, and we're talking the Andy Reids and the Belichicks. We're talking about the best of the best. Sure. Those guys at the top. You're telling me Kevin O'Connell was going to pull that off? Yeah, right. I love Kevin. Friend of mine. Was my quarterback when I was doing play-by-play at San Diego State. Pretty good quarterback, too. Dude's tall. He's like 6'5". And I love Kevin. I'm not doing that with that roster. No kidding. You know, I might be able to win 13 if I get some good breaks, and I got Kirk Cousins and Jefferson and Cook and these guys. All right, I could do that. That roster? Not so much. Dude won seven games and almost made, I mean, within a whisker, one game late in the year of winning a game of making the playoffs twice with nothing. Oh, but he's only the 29th best coach in the league. Okay, all right. Then ESPN comes out and says, you know, the Falcons roster is only the 26th best in the NFL. All right, if that's the way you want to look at it. I mean, everybody gets all up in their, you know, tighty-whities and bunched up about, you know, young quarterbacks and all that kind of stuff. Fine. I mean, let's not forget the Falcons probably have the best backup quarterback in the entire NFL. If he's not number one, maybe he's two behind Andy Dalton. But you know what? Dude's pretty good. Okay, whatever. And that goes back to Chris Sims and that stupid list that Chris Sims sent out where he said, yeah, Desmond Ritter's the 40th best quarterback in the NFL. 40th. 40th behind a number of backups. Okay. Now, again, I know that I am a some people will refer to it as a homer, okay? And I always say, if you call me a homer, here's the deal. If by homer you mean I love my city, love my high school, Lithonia High, love my college, DeKalb College, even though it's no longer there. I don't even know what they call DeKalb Central anymore. It was Georgia Perimeter for a while, and I think
now it's under the Georgia State. Yeah, it's under the Georgia State umbrella now.
Yeah. Well, if you go to Georgia State Clarkston, I think that's the name. If I'm wrong, sorry, on their Memorial Drive. Way back in the day, it was DeKalb Central, and I went to DeKalb Central. If you mean I love my schools and I love my teams and I love all the, that makes me a homer, sure. Okay. But I'm also legitimate about it. I mean, I am legit about it. Okay. When I tell you that Atlanta United's, you know, okay, we got to fix some things. When I tell you that the Atlanta Hawks got to do something, they got to do something. Or at least be, I don't know how you can be transparent if they're setting them next year, but you know, you gotta give us a reason to believe. But I'm not sitting here pounding the table saying, you know, at the moment, the Atlanta Hawks, you know, after getting rid of John Collins, the Atlanta Hawks probably took a big step up. It's addition by subtraction, you know? And no John Collins means the Atlanta Hawks are going to win 58 games next year, and they're going to be the number two seed or maybe even number one, and oh, my God, we can win it all. See, I haven't said that because that's not – nobody's going to believe you, and it's not true, okay? Right now, you're not any better than a 500 team you were to end the season last year. Now, you may slightly be better, actually, even without John Collins, only because Quinn Snyder is such an upgraded coach. Okay, maybe you get to 43 wins, but I mean, we're not talking 58. And even then, you know, if you don't replace John Collins, okay, so I'm legit about it. But I will tell you this, if you don't see what I've been at the beginning of the year, when, you know, after they started off, they would start off 14-4 and they hit a little skid, the Braves did. Then they went hot again and they went to 25-11, right? And then they kind of fell into this kind of like little rut. And that was right after Fried and Wright kind of got knocked around and out. And they were in a rut for a couple, 3 weeks where they were playing kind of, you know, 500 ball. And it was like, okay, they're going to break out. And then they went out on the West Coast and lost a couple of games to the Oakland A's. You're like, oh, my God, really? But we know the moment now that it all happened, though, right? We know the moment it happened. And the moment that it happened is, this is why I said at the beginning of the show, all you do is you're going to make them mad. Because the moment that this team hit a sixth, seventh, and eighth gear was when Pete Alonso stood in the dugout and yelled, "Throw it again! Throw it again!" And our guys went, "What the? What? What did he say? Throw it again! Throw it again! Oh, we'll throw it again!" And they got mad. It's a happy mad, okay? It's a happy mad. And they just started torching everybody. Oh, okay. So, again, this goes back to the perception. I'm legit here, and I'm legit telling you the Atlanta Falcons are a pretty damn good football team and that they are very well coached. Coaching is something that you know as a college fan how important it is. Mark Richt was an extremely good football coach. Kirby Smart, on the other hand, is an exceptional football coach. And you see the difference. There are schools that would have killed for what Mark Richt was able to do at Georgia. Killed! Killed! And yet, it wasn't good enough for Georgia because they had to have exceptional. Well, the same is true here. When you look at the Atlanta Falcons, they have an exceptional coach. I think he's really, really good. I think his staff is really, really good. I think you saw Frank Bush step in for Dean Pease last year and do what he did. You know, Ryan Nielsen has NFL head coach stamped all over his face, and he's going to be your defensive coordinator this year. This is going to be really good. One of the unsung stories about the Atlanta Braves, I'm tying the two together, how good the coaching staff is. The Braves coaching staff is excellent. It's the best coaching staff in all of baseball. Ron Washington, Rick Kranitz, Kevin Seitzer, Chipper Jones, and, of course, the manager. That's the best staff. And I say, so back then I was saying it's not close because I saw talent, I saw coaching, it's not close. And it remains that way. It's not close that the Braves are the best team. Just send the whole team out to play the American League All-Stars, would you? Braves versus the American League All-Stars. I mean, that's pretty much what it is anyway. Well, just send our guys out there. It is the John Chuckery Show. Next up, Jonathan Williams of Dogs Daily. We're going to talk to him about what's going on as we count down to the start of camp. And we are looking at, what, about less than a month from camp in Athens. And we're about to be knocking on that dog's door next on Sports Radio 92 on The Game and the Odyssey app. From the Northern Kia Studios, Sports Radio 92 on The Game, John Chuckery out for a few nights, John Fricke in for him. And I mentioned earlier, the countdown is on, the important dates you need to know, 14, 21, 29, 52, 14 to the first veterans reporting for the New York Football Jets, 21 to the Falcons vets reporting, 29 to the first Hall of Fame game, 52 days now to week zero. So the countdown is on for camps to open across the Southeastern Conference. We welcome into the program on the waitfor.com hotline. You can find him at Dr. Dr. J. Will. On the Twitter, Jonathan Williams, Dogs Daily. Hey, Jonathan, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me on the show.
No big deal. Hey, I got a question in regards to all of the issues, because we were having this discussion, Carl Dukes and I, the other day. We're having a discussion on the show about, you know, he said to me, these issues that are happening up in Athens, do you think that they are a big deal? And my answer was, no, I don't think they're any deal. I don't think they're any deal at all. I mean, they're a deal, Jonathan, to the degree that obviously we had a horrific car accident that took two people's lives. But as far as it affects the program, I don't think this is affecting the program at all. Do you?
I mean, I guess it can affect the program in some instances. Like you said, when a tragic event like that happens, it definitely affects the roster and the team morale in some capacity. But in regards to the success that the program is having, the trajectory of this team in 2023, I don't know that it's going to have any effect on that. I think Kirby Smart And his entire staff has shown great leadership throughout his entire time in Athens. And I think they're continuing to show they are working to get better as a program. They're working to fix these things. As long as he shows those things and as long as he continues to be a great leader and he surrounds himself with great people and they show those kids what is right, what is wrong, and they keep putting them in good positions, I think the program's going to be fine overall.
Yeah, I do too. And we know that they have been tabbed to be favorites in all 12 of their games, and much has been made about their strength of schedule, though I think it might prove out to be a little bit more difficult. And again, Jonathan, I don't think we have to really worry about your strength of schedule. If you're going to win another Natty, you're going to have to go through an SEC title game and two playoff games. That stretch alone earns you a Natty, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the same instance as last year. You go into the SEC championship game undefeated, you probably still have a chance of going into the playoff, even if you do lose that game, of course, depending on who your matchup is. But yeah, the ultimate goal is you go undefeated in the regular season and you take care of business in Atlanta and you're in a prime position to go and win a national title again.
You know, being list season, Jonathan, there was one list here that I'm going to talk more at length about tomorrow, ranking the quarterbacks in the SEC. And we know who the big names are coming in because they're established quarterbacks. We're talking to the KJ Jeffersons and Devin Learys and people of that nature. I'm curious from a standpoint, if you say that maybe the quarterback, three-headed quarterback at Alabama, where Milroy, I understand, is leading, three-headed quarterback at Georgia, where Carson Beck is leading, we're going to get a breakout guy from one of those two on both teams that will eventually propel the starting quarterback of that particular team to top two or three in the SEC by the end of the year, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think both teams, I think Georgia is probably in a better position quarterback-wise than Alabama just because it kind of seems like they have their guy, Carson Beck, who's been in the program for 3 years now. He's been groomed to take over this leadership role and become the starting quarterback. Alabama kind of got to experiment with Milroy a little bit last year and see how he did. I think he did okay just for a guy that kind of got thrown to the wolves a little bit. And, of course, when you're being compared to how Bryce Young was playing for Alabama, you're never going to live up to those standards. And then you bring in Tyler Buchner from Notre Dame, a guy that does have some experience. But, again, I think there are more questions surrounding that Alabama quarterback room than there are Georgia's.
You know, there's been talk about how Nick Saban handles his quarterbacks. We saw the situation with, Tua and Jalen Hurts when he was there. I think it's been somewhat unfairly said of Kirby Smart. That he doesn't have a quick enough trigger or something. I'm like, dude, just won two national titles. I think he knows what he's doing here. And I think you've seen him pull the trigger before. You know, Jacob Eason happened and suddenly you had to go to Jake Fromm. And then you have Dwan Mathis happen and you got to make another decision. If anything happens to Carson Beck, he's not going to hesitate here. If Carson Beck doesn't come out of the, jump here in a couple of weeks by the time you get to South Carolina to make a move, right?
No, absolutely not. I think it's funny because now that it's not until this season until Kirby Smart has really had a quarterback that has just waited his turn in the system. You mentioned the first two, Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm, were both true freshmen when they took over the reins of the offense. And then even Stetson Bennett, while he was at Georgia for multiple years before he became starting quarterback, he was at JUCO for a year, and then he came back under a new system with Todd Monken. So he really isn't even grouped together in that Carson Beck conversation of people who have waited their turn, developed themselves within the offense, and really gotten their bearings before they became the starter for the team. So, yeah, I think if it did come down to it, if, say, your starter, whoever it is, whether it's Brock Vandegrift or Carson Beck or whoever, if they aren't getting the job done, I don't think he'll hesitate to pull the trigger because he knows what's on the line. He knows what his team has to do. And if the guy's not getting it done, then he's going to take that guy on going with his next bet. He does it at every other position, so why wouldn't he do it at quarterback?
Jonathan Williams of Dogs Daily. He's at @DR_JWill on the Twitter. He's talking dogs with John Fricke on Sports Radio 910 The Game. Is there a clear difference? Now, I know that Beck is going to be the starter, but is there a clear difference, like a gap between Beck and Brock and Gunner, or are those three pretty close?
I'd say the gap is, like I said, Carson Beck has just been there longer. This is what comes with the territory of Georgia running a pro-style offense like they did with Munkin, and what it sounds like they're going to be doing the same thing with Mike Bobo now as offensive coordinator is, yeah, it takes some time for you to analyze the offense, really study it. It takes time off the field to really become comfortable with commanding the offense and being ready to become the starting quarterback. So Carson Beck has had more time, and he's had more time to just become more mature. You know, if you've heard him talk here during the offseason, he has spoken about how he thinks he is more mature at this point. He understands what is called upon and what it takes to become the starter at Georgia and what that looks like for him. And he said in his first years, I was not ready to do that as a person and as a player. I was not ready to become a starting quarterback for Georgia. So I think that's really the only difference. I mean, both guys, Brock Vandegrift and even Gunnar Stockton, all have all the tools in the world to be successful in the SEC and as college quarterbacks. But the gap is that Carson Beck just has more experience. And while it's even limited experience, he did get quite a bit of experience last year due to Georgia blowing out teams in the fourth by the fourth quarter, to where Carson Beck gets to get rolled in and he gets a few series to where he can chunk it around a little bit and just kind of experiment with himself and become more comfortable. And now I think he is just 100% ready to become the starter. And I don't know if you can say that for the other two guys right now.
All right, Jonathan Williams joining us. We're talking about some of looking ahead to some of the camp battles for Georgia here. Running back, is it going to be running back by committee, or do you see one of the backs breaking out and becoming that number one gun?
Well, I think over the years you've seen it become a committee. I think the last time you really saw just one guy or even two guys just dominate that room is when Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel were there, and then even the year after that when it was DeAndre Swift as the headliner of the group. Since then, though, it's just kind of been a running back by committee. You don't have guys going for over 1,000 rushing yards in a season anymore. Kenny McIntosh was just your do-it-all guy last year, but even then, they were going in with Dejan Edwards. They were going in there with Kendall Milton when he was healthy, and then they even put in true freshman Branson Robinson as well. This year, I think it's all going to determine on the health in that room. Can guys stay healthy? Can Kendall Milton finally get a season where he's just 100% healthy the entire year? If he is, I think he could be a guy to do it that can kind of take over that room. But even Dejan Edwards, he's earned his stripes at this point. He's earned his carries, and he is more deserving of getting his chunk of playing time. So it's really just going to depend on where you at health-wise. Are guys banged up? And so if that's the case, then, yeah, you're probably going to have one guy just toting the rock for the majority of it. But I think it's still going to – I think their plan for this year is definitely going to be just keep it with a running back by committee.
Jonathan, on the defensive side of the football, who's the hardest guy to replace? Is it a – because you replace guys at every level here. And I know that you're reloading. I get it. I mean, and there's stars all over the place and five stars and everything. But is there a leader that will be harder to replace in terms of his impact on the defense than any of the other guys?
Yeah, I think if you're – most people would probably tell you Jalen Carter, but I would say from a leadership standpoint, it's Christopher Smith, who played safety last year for Georgia and was a veteran safety. That was a guy that started for Georgia for multiple seasons, and he did a really good job of that. But he was very much so a leader in that locker room and a guy that people look to in times of adversity. So that's a tough one to replace. But the good news is that you have guys like Javon Bullard, Malachi Starks is going into year two. Tyke Smith is looking to be 100% healthy this year. And even the true freshman, Jonell Aguero, you have a lot of guys that you can experiment with there. Dan Jackson, even, he was banged up last year, but he looks to be a full go this year. So you have a lot of guys at once that can kind of help combat trying to replace a guy like Christopher Smith. You're not just having to highlight one singular guy that you are hoping replaces a guy like Christopher Smith. You get to do it almost like I said with the running backs. It's like a safety room by committee. You have so many different names that they're going to experiment with, and a lot of different guys that you're going to see out there playing safety for Georgia, even at the star position as well.
Is Dogs Daily going to open up a bureau at Buford High School? You're just going to hire a guy, and that'll be his job.
Honestly, it seems like you should at this point. There's so many Georgia targets on that roster. Dylan Raiola now coming in. KJ Bolden's on the list right there. Jaden Perlot is a commit in the 2025 class at linebacker. So there's so many names on that roster, and they're right down the road from us. So it seems like, yeah, you should just have guys there 24/7 because there's so much to cover just from the Buford Wolves.
Expand this out just in the final two questions, if you would, Jonathan. Jonathan Williams of Dogs Daily with John Fricke. Jonathan, two questions about the SEC. Final year of divisions here. Is it a case where you look at South Carolina's going to bat first here? I would imagine that they're going to put up at least a little bit more of a fight than they did last year, considering the way they finished the season. But is there really anybody in the East that's going to – is Tennessee really going to step up behind Joe Milton? Is Billy Napier going to get it together down in Florida with a new quarterback, you know, and Graham Mertz? Is there anybody in the East, Devin Leary, Kentucky, that might even be on your radar as being, okay, that might actually – you know, the one we have to be careful of?
I think it's between South Carolina or Tennessee. I don't think Kentucky's going to do it. They just had what would have been a first-round draft pick and Will Levis, and they couldn't really get the job done there. They really didn't live up to the expectations of them last year. I think Billy Napier and the Florida Gators are still kind of in rebuilding mode with Graham Mertz at quarterback. Even them, even the Gators, they sounded like they didn't have too much confidence going into this year with Graham Mertz as a starting quarterback. It looked like they might have potential dipping into the portal and grabbing another guy. And just the rest of that roster, some of the guys that they lost, I think they're still kind of in that rebuilding mode with Billy Napier. So I think it is between Tennessee and South Carolina. South Carolina, of course, returned Spencer Rattler. And I think they would put up a better fight this year. But, man, they had Georgia at home last year, and they got beat down into the ground by Georgia. It wasn't even close last year. Yeah. And then Tennessee probably is the best shot this year, though, just because it is going to be in Neyland Stadium. But even then, like you said, can Joe Milton replicate what Tennessee was able to do with Jalin Hyatt, Hendon Hooker, and those guys? I don't know. It's a big year for Josh Heupel up there to see if he can continue this success, which is what you have to do to really become a powerhouse in college right now, is you have to string successful seasons together consecutively. And so it's a big year for Josh Heupel and them. And I do think there are still some questions about Joe Milton. I don't think it's just a sure thing that he's going to go in there, light the world up, and be a Heisman frontrunner or anything like that. I think it is going to have to be – you're going to have to figure things out from week one to week four and see if it is going to be like that. Because if you're going into the season expecting that he's going to do the same thing that Hendon Hooker did, I think you might be in for, I think you might be a little bit disappointed if you're a Tennessee fan.
Final question, Jonathan Williams, as we head towards SEC Media Days in Nashville coming up in about 10 days or so. And as we look for a number two in the East, I think we look for a number three in the West. Alabama and LSU are clear of the field, I think. But one of those teams will have a good season. One of those teams will step up, and it could be Arkansas, and it could be Ole Miss. I guess it could be A&M, I guess. I don't know. I guess. Is there a team out west that you think that is going to possibly, outside of Alabama and LSU, be a little bit more of a harder out this year than some fans realize?
I think Ole Miss always has a shot with Lane Kiffin just because of the offense powerhouse that he has built out there. He always has the offense going. It's just a matter of getting the defense going on top of that as well. So I think you can always kind of bet on them to maybe be that tough out in the West and maybe exceed expectations, whereas LSU and Alabama right now are the two front runners right now, but maybe Ole Miss can finally get some things rolling there and they end up being one or two in the West. And Arkansas, they return KJ Jefferson. That's really important for them. Sam Pittman, he's kind of been able to elevate that program a little higher than it was a few years ago. So maybe he can finally push through that threshold this year and start getting into the topper edge of the West. But I think really it's going to boil down to LSU, Alabama, and Ole Miss. But then maybe Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher can finally put to use that number one recruiting class that they just had a year ago and play like everyone expected them to and play to their level of football and not be losing games to App State. So I think maybe four teams, I'd say A&M, LSU, Alabama, and Arkansas would be those four teams. Everybody else, I don't know if I could see them reaching up to those one or two seeds.
I do appreciate it. Next stop, Nashville for you?
Maybe. I don't know. We're still trying to figure those things out. I hope so, though.
All right. Well, it sounds good. Hey, Jonathan, I do appreciate it. At Dr. Dr. J, the letter J, W-I-L-L, on the Twitter, at Dr. J. Will. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Jonathan Williams of Dogs Daily on the WaitFor.com hotline. All right, I don't know how Chuck does the show, but I know how I do it when he's not here. We get belly up to the bar, smash a few home runs. Oh, no, wait, that's the brace. Smash a few beers. And we're going to start doing that over the next 3 hours when I open up the phone lines at 404-726-0929. And we start talking, you and me, and it begins right after this.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Northern Kia Studios, Sports Radio 92 on the game, John Chuckery out for a few nights, John Fricke in for him. And I mentioned earlier, the countdown is on, the important dates you need to know, 14, 21, 29, 52, 14 to the first veterans reporting for the New York Football Jets, 21 to the Falcons vets reporting, 29 to the first Hall of Fame game, 52 days now to week zero. So the countdown is on for camps to open across the Southeastern Conference. We welcome into the program on the waitfor.com hotline. You can find him at Dr. Dr. J. Will. On the Twitter, Jonathan Williams, Dogs Daily. Hey, Jonathan, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me on the show.
No big deal. Hey, I got a question in regards to all of the issues, because we were having this discussion, Carl Dukes and I, the other day. We're having a discussion on the show about, you know, he said to me, these issues that are happening up in Athens, do you think that they are a big deal? And my answer was, no, I don't think they're any deal. I don't think they're any deal at all. I mean, they're a deal, Jonathan, to the degree that obviously we had a horrific car accident that took two people's lives. But as far as it affects the program, I don't think this is affecting the program at all. Do you?
I mean, I guess it can affect the program in some instances. Like you said, when a tragic event like that happens, it definitely affects the roster and the team morale in some capacity. But in regards to the success that the program is having, the trajectory of this team in 2023, I don't know that it's going to have any effect on that. I think Kirby Smart and his entire staff has shown great leadership throughout his entire time in Athens. And I think they're continuing to show they are working to get better as a program. They're working to fix these things. As long as he shows those things and as long as he continues to be a great leader and he surrounds himself with great people and they show those kids what is right, what is wrong, and they keep putting them in good positions, I think the program's going to be fine overall.
Yeah, I do too, and we know that they have been tabbed to be favorites in all 12 of their games, and much has been made about their strength of schedule, though I think it might prove out to be a little bit more difficult. And again, Jonathan, I don't think we have to really worry about your strength of schedule. If you're going to win another natty, you're going to have to go through an SEC title game and two playoff games. That stretch alone earns you a natty, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the same instance as last year. You go into the SEC championship game undefeated. You probably still have a chance of going into the playoffs, even if you do lose that game, of course, depending on who your matchup is. But yeah, the ultimate goal is you go undefeated in the regular season and you take care of business in Atlanta and you're in a prime position to go and win the national title again.
You know, being list season, Jonathan, there was one list here that I'm going to talk more at length about tomorrow, ranking the quarterbacks in the SEC. And we know who the big names are coming in because they're established quarterbacks. We're talking to the KJ Jeffersons and Devin Learys and people of that nature. I'm curious from a standpoint, if you say that maybe the quarterback, three-headed quarterback at Alabama, where Milroy, I understand, is leading, three-headed quarterback at Georgia, where Carson Beck is leading, we're going to get a breakout guy from one of those two on both teams that will eventually propel the starting quarterback of that particular team to top two or three in the SEC by the end of the year, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think both teams, I think Georgia is probably in a better position quarterback-wise than Alabama just because it kind of seems like they have their guy, Carson Beck, who's been in the program for 3 years now. He's been groomed to take over this leadership role and become the starting quarterback. Alabama kind of got to experiment with Milroe a little bit last year and see how he did. I think he did okay just for a guy that kind of got thrown to the wolves a little bit. And, of course, when you're being compared to how Bryce Young was playing for Alabama, you're never going to live up to those standards. And then you bring in Tyler Buchner from Notre Dame, a guy that does have some experience. But, again, I think there are more questions surrounding that Alabama quarterback room than there are Georgia's.
You know, there's been talk about how Nick Saban handles his quarterbacks. We saw the situation with, you know, Tua and Jalen Hurts when he was there. I think it's been somewhat unfairly said of Kirby Smart that he doesn't have a quick enough trigger or something. I'm like, dude, just won two national titles. I think he knows what he's doing here. And I think you've seen him pull the trigger before. You know, Jacob Eason happened, and suddenly you had to go to Jake Fromm. And then you have Dwan Mathis happen, and you got to make another decision. If anything happens to Carson Beck, he's not going to hesitate here. If Carson Beck doesn't come out of the, you know, jump here in a couple of weeks by the time you get to South Carolina to make a move, right?
No, absolutely not. I think it's funny because it's not until this season until Kirby Smart has really had a quarterback that has just waited his turn in the system. You mentioned the first two, Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm, were both true freshmen when they took over the reins of the offense. And then even Stetson Bennett, while he was at Georgia for multiple years before he became starting quarterback, he was at JUCO for a year, and then he came back under a new system with Todd Monken. So he really isn't even grouped together in that Carson Beck conversation of people who have waited their turn, developed themselves within the offense, and really gotten their bearings before they became the starter for the team. So, yeah, I think if it did come down to it, if, say, your starter, whoever it is, whether it's Brock Vandegrift or Carson Beck or whoever, if they aren't getting the job done, I don't think he'll hesitate to pull the trigger because he knows what's on the line. He knows what his team has to do. And if the guy's not getting it done, then he's going to take that guy on going with his next bet. He does it at every other position, so why wouldn't he do it at quarterback?
Jonathan Williams of Dogs Daily. He's at DR_JWILL on the Twitter. He's talking dogs with John Fricke at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Is there a clear difference? Now, I know that Beck is going to be the starter, but is there a clear difference, like a gap between Beck and Brock and Gunner, or are those three pretty close?
I'd say the gap is, like I said, Carson Beck has just been there longer. This is what comes with the territory of Georgia running a pro-style offense like they did with Munkin, and what it sounds like they're going to be doing the same thing with Mike Bobo now as offensive coordinator is, yeah, it takes some time for you to analyze the offense, really study it. It takes time off the field to really become comfortable with commanding the offense and being ready to become the starting quarterback. So Carson Beck has had more time, and he's had more time to just become more mature. You know, if you've heard him talk here during the offseason, he has spoken about how he thinks he is more mature at this point. He understands what is called upon and what it takes to become the starter at Georgia and what that looks like for him. And he said in his first years, I was not ready to do that as a person and as a player. I was not ready to become a starting quarterback for Georgia. So I think that's really the only difference. I mean, both guys, Brock Vandegrift and even Gunnar Stockton, all have all the tools in the world to be successful in the SEC and as college quarterbacks. But the gap is that Carson Beck just has more experience. And while it's even limited experience, he did get quite a bit of experience last year due to Georgia blowing out teams by the fourth quarter, to where Carson Beck gets to get rolled in and he gets a few series to where he can chunk it around a little bit and just kind of experiment with himself and become more comfortable. And now I think he is just 100% ready to become the starter. And I don't know if you can say that for the other two guys right now.
All right, Jonathan Williams joining us. We're talking about looking ahead to some of the camp battles for Georgia here. Running back, is it going to be running back by committee, or do you see one of the backs breaking out and becoming that number one gun?
Well, I think over the years you've seen it become a committee. I think the last time you really saw just one guy or even two guys just dominate that room is when Nick Chubb and Sonny Michelle were there, and then even the year after that when it was DeAndre Swift as the headliner of the group. Since then, though, it's just kind of been a running back by committee. You don't have guys going for over 1,000 rushing yards in a season anymore. Kenny McIntosh was just your do-it-all guy last year, but even then, they were going in with Dejan Edwards. They were going in there with Kendall Milton when he was healthy, and then they even put in true freshman Branson Robinson as well. This year, I think it's all going to determine on the health in that room. Can guys stay healthy? Can Kendall Milton finally get a season where he's just 100% healthy the entire year? If he is, I think he could be a guy to do it that can kind of take over that room. But even Dejan Edwards, he's earned his stripes at this point. He's earned his carries, and he is more deserving of getting his chunk of playing time. So it's really just going to depend on where you at health-wise. Are guys banged up? And so if that's the case, then, yeah, you're probably going to have one guy just toting the rock for the majority of it. But I think it's still going to – I think their plan for this year is definitely going to be just keep it with a running back by committee.
Jonathan, on the defensive side of the football, who's the hardest guy to replace? Is it because you replace guys at every level here. And I know that you're reloading. I get it. I mean, and there's stars all over the place and five stars and everything. But is there a leader that will be harder to replace in terms of his impact on the defense than any of the other guys?
Yeah, I think most people would probably tell you Jalen Carter, but I would say from a leadership standpoint, it's Christopher Smith, who played safety last year for Georgia and was a veteran safety. That was a guy that played started for Georgia for multiple seasons, and he did a really good job of that. But he was very much so a leader in that locker room and a guy that people look to in times of adversity. So that's a tough one to replace. But the good news is that you have guys like Javon Bullard, Malachi Starks is going into year two. Tyke Smith is looking to be 100% healthy this year. And even the true freshman, Jonell Agbero, you have a lot of guys that you can experiment with there. Dan Jackson, even, he was banged up last year, but he looks to be a full go this year. So you have a lot of guys at once that can kind of help combat trying to replace a guy like Christopher Smith. You're not just having to highlight one singular guy that you are hoping replaces a guy like Christopher Smith. You get to do it almost like I said with the running backs. It's like a safety room by committee. You have so many different names that they're going to experiment with, and a lot of different guys that you're going to see out there playing safety for Georgia, even at the star position as well.
Is Dogs Daily going to open up a bureau at Buford High School? You're just going to hire a guy, and that'll be his job.
Honestly, it seems like you should at this point. There's so many Georgia targets on that roster. Dylan Raiola now coming in. KJ Bolden's on the list right there. Jaden Perlot is a commit in the 2025 class at linebacker. So there's so many names on that roster, and they're right down the road from us. So it seems like, yeah, you should just have guys there 24/7 because there's so much to cover just from the Buford Wolves.
Expand this out just in the final two questions, if you would, Jonathan. Jonathan Williams of Dogs Daily with John Fricke. Jonathan, two questions about the SEC. Final year of divisions here. Is it a case where you look at South Carolina's going to bat first here? I would imagine that they're going to put up at least a little bit more of a fight than they did last year, considering the way they finished the season. But is there really anybody in the East that's going to – is Tennessee really going to step up behind Joe Milton? Is Billy Napier going to get it together down in Florida with a new quarterback, you know, and Graham Mertz? Is there anybody in the East, Devin Leary, Kentucky, that might even be on your radar as being, okay, that might actually – you know, the one we have to be careful of?
I think it's between South Carolina or Tennessee. I don't think Kentucky's going to do it. They just had what would have been a first-round draft pick in Will Levis, and they couldn't really get the job done there. They really didn't live up to the expectations of them last year. I think Billy Napier and the Florida Gators are still kind of in rebuilding mode with Graham Mertz at quarterback. Even the Gators, they sounded like they didn't have too much confidence going into this year with Graham Mertz as a starting quarterback. It looked like they might have potential of dipping into the portal and grabbing another guy. And just the rest of that roster, some of the guys that they lost, I think they're still kind of in that rebuilding mode with Billy Napier. So I think it is between Tennessee and South Carolina. South Carolina, of course, returned Spencer Rattler. And I think they would put up a better fight this year. But, man, they had Georgia at home last year, and they got beat down into the ground by Georgia. It wasn't even close last year.
Yeah.
Tennessee probably is the best shot this year, though, just because it is going to be in Neyland Stadium. But even then, like you said, can Joe Milton replicate what Tennessee was able to do with Jalin Hyatt, Hendon Hooker, and those guys? I don't know. It's a big year for Josh Heupel up there to see if he can continue this success, which is what you have to do to really become a powerhouse in college football right now, is you have to string successful seasons together consecutively. And so it's a big year for Josh Heupel and them. And I do think there are still some questions about Joe Milton. I don't think it's just a sure thing that he's going to go in there, light the world up, and be a Heisman frontrunner or anything like that. I think it is going to have to be – you're going to have to figure things out from week one to week four and see if it is going to be like that. Because if you're going into the season expecting that he's going to do the same thing that Hendon Hooker did, I think you might be in for, I think you might be a little bit disappointed if you're a Tennessee fan.
Final question, Jonathan Williams, as we head towards SEC Media Days in Nashville coming up in about 10 days or so. And as we look for a number two in the East, I think we look for a number three in the West. Alabama and LSU are clear of the field, I think. But one of those teams will have a good season. One of those teams will step up, and it could be Arkansas, and it could be Ole Miss. I guess it could be A&M, I guess. I don't know. I guess. Is there a team out west that you think that is going to possibly, outside of Alabama and LSU, be a little bit more of a harder out this year than some fans realize?
I think Ole Miss always has a shot with Lane Kiffin just because of the offense powerhouse that he has built out there. He always has the offense going. It's just a matter of getting the defense going on top of that as well. So I think you can always kind of bet on them to maybe be that tough out in the West and maybe exceed expectations, whereas LSU and Alabama right now are the two front runners right now, but maybe Ole Miss can finally get some things rolling there and they end up being one or two in the West. And Arkansas, they return KJ Jefferson. That's really important for them. Sam Pittman, he's kind of been able to elevate that program a little higher than it was a few years ago. So maybe he can finally push through that threshold this year. and get to, and start getting into the topper edge of the West. But I think really it's going to boil down to LSU, Alabama, and Ole Miss. But then maybe Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher can finally put to use that number one recruiting class that they just had a year ago and play like they everyone expected them to and play to their level of football and not be losing games to App State. So I think maybe four teams, I'd say A&M, LSU, Alabama, and Arkansas would be those four teams. Everybody else, I don't know if I could see them reaching up to those one or two seeds.
I do appreciate it. Next stop, Nashville for you?
Maybe. I don't know. We're still trying to figure those things out. I hope so, though.
All right. Well, it sounds good. Hey, Jonathan, I do appreciate it. At Dr. Dr. underscore J, the letter J, W-I-L-L, on the Twitter, at Dr. underscore J Will. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Jonathan Williams of Dogs Daily on the WadeFord.com hotline. All right. I don't know how Chuck does the show, but I know how I do it when he's not here. We get belly up to the bar. Smash a few home runs. Oh, no, wait, that's the brace. Smash a few beers. And we're going to start doing that over the next 3 hours when I open up the phone lines at 404-726-0929. And we start talking you and me. And it begins right after this.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.